Welcome back, everybody, to Beyond the Parsha, where we take the various things that occur in the Parsha and whatever else it may be, and we try to bring out halachic concepts in them. So tonight, what I want to do is, since we are still in the midst of Bereishis, and there's so much to learn in Sefer Bereishis, one of the main things, as we've pointed out many times on Shabbos, is, as the Ramban points out, Maisa Avos Simin Labanim, that what happened to our forefathers, what Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and everyone went through, and all of the midos that they exhibited in all the different times of their lives and encounters, teach us how we are supposed to live through our lives and through our encounters. Just like Avram was the pillar of Chesed, we have to be Balei Chesed. And Yitzchak, Gevura, and Avoda, we have to live in that way. Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Oalim, the MS of Yaakov, as we discussed on Shabbos, even though one of the main stories of Yaakov is something which seems to be very far away from MS, still, we make sure to highlight all of the midos of the Avos and the Imahos. And we see this come out over and over, week in, week out. All of these amazing midos which come up, even just this upcoming week, we have Rachel Mevaka Albaner, the power of Rachel, that she gave over the signs to her sister Leah to go ahead and marry so she wouldn't be embarrassed. Unbelievable what our Avos and Imahos went through. And it teaches us lessons in all elements of life. So on that note, I wanted to discuss a little bit about what is expected of us. You know, there's always going to be the written law. And we have the Torah, Baruch Hashem. We have so much to do. We have so many mitzvot, 613 mitzvot, maybe even more. 613 is one of the shitos in the Gemara and Makos. It's one of those Maimari Chazal that some of the rabbis talk about, just had a lot of mazel. That's the one we accept. And it wasn't really so much of a machlokas. We have 611 with Torah, the two that were said at Har Sinai. Baruch Hashem, we have 613 mitzvot. There's plenty to do, but there's even more than that to do, because not every single situation could be written in the Torah. Not every single thing, not every single instance of what we are going to come across could be written in the Torah. So we are going to have to know, what exactly is it that Hashem wants from us? And this is what people call the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch. You know, Shulchan Aruch has four sections. We have Orach Chaim, Yoredeiv, and Ezer, Choshen Mishpat. We have the four sections of Shulchan Aruch. So some say the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch is Ratzon Hashem. Okay, put aside all the halacha. Obviously, we follow a halacha, but now we're in a situation. What does Hashem want from us in this situation? You're faced with a decision. What would Hashem want from me in this situation? And the different factors that go into play as to figuring out what the Ratzon Hashem is. Now, this is something which takes a lifetime's worth of work to acquire. It's something which is difficult to do, but we have different principles, different kolim, different lessons from our Avos and Imos, which can maybe guide us along the way. Now, this shir is based a lot on a shir I heard from one of my rabbeim, Rabbi Rosner. Many of you probably know him or have listened to multiple things of his. He is a Torah giant who has made such an impact. He was here for a while in New York, in Woodmere, in NYU, moved to Israel, dominates OU Torah. He has everything, the Nachyomi, right? He's got the Nachyomi going on, which is amazing. He has Dafyomi, which is unbelievable. And he has so much more. He has the Parsha Shir every week, just came out with a Sefer Shalom Rav, which is excellent. Shalom Rav, name of Shalom Rosner, excellent one, excellent title, and excellent book. And also, he has a series on the Sefer Achinuch, goes through all 613 mitzvot, like 25, 30-minute shiurim. So much, unbelievable. Actually, I heard a story, Rabbi Leibowitz was talking last week, and he said him and Rabbi Rosner were chavrusos. Pretty solid chavrusa tandem right there. I remember they used to sit in DRS when we were there, and they would learn together. That's a pretty powerful chavrusa. So they would go, and they were having a chavrusa, and Rabbi Leibowitz said they were doing krisos. And Rav David Willig, Rav Mordechai Willig's brother, he's a Rebbe in DRS, he's my Rebbe in 12th grade, and he walked over to them, and he said, "So, new, when are you guys starting to do Daf Yomi in your shuls?" And they're like, "Come on, like, what, we're going to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to give shir to one or two people? What's going to, no one's going to come. What is this?" And he said, "No, you got to do it, you got to do it." 15 years later, look at how many people are doing Daf Yomi because of those two people, because of that, but you never know. You got to invest in Torah and Emir Tzashem. Hashem will take us the rest of the way. But what we are going to focus on tonight is this idea of Ratzon Hashem. And really, the best place to look, the first place to look, is there is a Radak in Sefer Yoshua. In Sefer Yoshua, the Navi tells us that Moshe, even in his death, was considered an Eved Hashem. This is actually what I spoke about at Mrs. Gluck's funeral, the Eved Hashem, even after you pass away, and this is how the rest of your generations live after you can continue to be an Eved Hashem if your lessons and your ideals are being used and being lived in further generations. But it talks about this idea of Moshe being an Eved Hashem. And what is being an Eved Hashem? And the Radak, I apologize for no source sheet again, that's on me. We'll get it one of these days. But the Radak points out that being an Eved Hashem means that we are using all of our talents, all of our skills, to go ahead and serve Hashem in the best way possible. every single thing that we do in every facet of our lives is being dictated by the question of what does Hashem want from us in this situation. Now, obviously, we have the 613 mitzvos, but as we pointed out already, not every single situation can be covered. So what are we supposed to do in these in-between situations, which is most of the things that we come across in our lives? And what Rabbi Rosner wanted to do, what I want to highlight tonight, is four different ways outside of the 613 that this idea of Ratzon Hashem kind of expresses itself and the different lessons that we can learn from that. Number one, the Ramban, by the Pasuk of Asisa HaYashar V'Hatov Be'enei Hashem, talks about the fact that, as we've just mentioned, there are so many principles and so many laws brought down in the Torah, brought down in the Gemaras, and everything. If your ox does this and that does that, and you damage this and you damage that, and there's so much. You go through Parshas Kisetze, you go through Parshas Shoftim Mishpatim, there are so many mitzvos, but still, not every single situation can be covered by these laws. And someone could follow the letter of the law. You can make sure you're following every single last prot, every little detail, but you could still be a jerk. V'asisa yashar v'atov b'enei Hashem, says the Ramban, the Torah comes and says, look, we can't get every single situation down, but go in with these klalim. You got to make sure to learn them, know what applies where, and then v'asisa yashar v'atov b'enei Hashem, do what you know Hashem would want from you. Leaves it open a little bit as to what exactly we are supposed to know, how we are supposed to go ahead and serve God in the best way possible. This is what's known as lifnim mishuras hadin. This is what's known as going above the letter of the law. We have to, at some point, be able to figure out what it is that Hashem wants from us. And we see this all the time with Shabbos as well. When it comes to Shabbos, we know the Ramban also tells us that there's this idea of Shabbason. Aside from something which may not be usher lehalacha, based on one of the melachos, is it bishul, is it borer, maybe not. But it's just not something you're supposed to be doing on Shabbos. Not every single situation can be covered, but this is not Shabbistic material. This is not a Shabbistic type of thing to do. So where do we draw the line on that? That's something that we need to think about. But this idea that the Torah kind of leaves certain things open like this to say, okay, now what do you think Hashem would want? And we see this again with Dina de Bar Metzra, for example. There's a halacha that if someone's selling their property, you offer it to your neighbor first. Now this halacha is not quoted anywhere in the Torah, yet we learned it out from Chazal after the fact, because it's the menschlich thing to do. You want to give that person an opportunity to expand before you introduce someone else to the community, whatever it may be. So you ask them first. We've actually used this idea as maybe a defense that the Malachim gave, that the Jewish people gave to the Malachim. Right? I think we were talking about the fact that the Jewish people are treated like banim, that we're children to Hashem. The only exception to Dina de Bar Metzra, you don't have to offer your field to your neighbor if you're giving it to your child. So come the Malachim and say to Hashem, Hashem, you're going to give the Torah to the Jewish people? Are you crazy? So aside from the fact that it's crazy, because look at them, they're complainers, they're sinners. Aside from all of that, you're going to give the Torah to the Jewish people? It's not fair. There's a halacha as Dina de Bar Metzra. You got to give it to your neighbors first. We're neighbors with you up here in Shemayim. You got to give it to us first. So the Banim, Bnei Yisrael came back. Moshe Rabbeinu said, ah, there's an exception to that rule. If you're giving it to your children, we, the Bnei Yisrael, are your children, so you got to give it to us. Dina de Bar Metzra, another one of these halachos, of these examples of something where not every single detail is going to be written down. We have to be able to read between the lines and figure out what we really have to do in a certain situation. Idea number two is that sometimes the Torah leaves something open on purpose, so that way we have the ability to do something on our own. And yeah, what about the question, Gadol HaMetzuva V'Yoseh, Yoseh Rimisha Eina Metzuva V'Yoseh? Chazal teach us, the Gemara in Kiddushin tells us, Daf Lamed, that it's better to do something when you're commanded to do so rather than when you're not commanded to do so. Why would this be the case? Because it's more difficult to do. There's a bigger Yetzirah not to do something when you're told to do it than when you are told to do it. Right? It's much harder to do something when you know that you have to do it. If you're doing your homework because it's your homework versus, oh, I just want to do this math equation, it's a totally different thing to do. It's much more difficult. So, yeah, that's true to an extent, but we also know that it shows your love. It shows how passionate you are about something if you're doing it, even when you're not commanded to do so. And on this idea, there's a crazy idea of the Ran in Parshas Vayera. The Ran discusses what was the most difficult challenge of the Akedah. And we've spent so much time talking about the Akedah and Akedah's Yitzchak. Who is it a test for? Was it a test for Avram? Was it a test for Yitzchak? On the one hand, Avram was willing to forego everything he had worked so hard for in his entire life, aside from begging for a child his whole life. He also preached morality. He preached ethics and doing the right thing, and now he's going to go ahead and shecht his son. This is going to ruin everything that he had worked his entire life for. Yitzchak, on the other hand, we know that he was an adult. He knew what was going on, and this is something which is obviously challenging for Yitzchak, to give your life up to go ahead and serve Hashem in the best way possible. And we've spoken a lot in the past about this, Akedas Yitzchak Hashem HaTov, that it's the binding, because he had a moment of inspiration. Says the Ran something totally different, which if the Ran didn't say it, we wouldn't begin to even think this. Says the Ran, what was the most difficult part of the Akedah? Well, what was Avraham really commanded to do? Kach na es bincha es yichidecha asher ahavta es Yitzchak. Kach na. Says the Ran, he was never commanded to go ahead and do the Akedah. He never had to do it. Hashem never told him, you have to do this. Hashem said, look, I can't make you do this. It's not something which is moral. You know it doesn't fit with what I do. I also promised you that you're going to have all these future generations. I can't go against it, but kachna. It's my will. Hashem revealed his will in some capacity. And now the test is Avraham going to go ahead and do the Ratzon Hashem? Wasn't commanded to do so. This was something voluntarily that he was going to be doing. Now, can you imagine voluntarily going and ruining your whole life's work? Yet still, we see Avraham Avinu's effort, and we see what he was willing to do for Hashem. Kach na. Sometimes Hashem leaves it open, so that way we would be able to do it. Hashem is saying, I would appreciate this if you would do this for me. Not necessarily go ahead and do this. And yes, as we pointed out, Gadol HaMetzuvah V'Yoseh, it's much harder to do, but still, it shows a different type of love. It's a different level of love. And we see this idea come up in other areas of Halacha as well. There is no bracha on Seder night when we're doing Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is there no bracha as we go into it? So some say, oh, maybe there really is. Kiddush is really the bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But most explain, yeah?
What happens if he gave the situation where he thought maybe in his head he had to take care of, the other person.
Oh, Yishmael, that's what you're saying. Then maybe he was gone.
And that was the purpose.
So you're saying that's why it wasn't such a big go. Interesting. Okay, we'll talk about it after. An interesting thought. Nice one, Jerry. I like it. So this comes up in other areas of halacha as well. When it comes to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, so there's no real bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yeah, we have the bracha afterwards, but as we go and have the second kos, but there's no bracha before we do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a huge mitzvah. This is something we spend so much time. This is what it's all about, giving it over to the next generation, giving it over to our family and friends who we're having the Seder with, and there's no bracha. So, some say, yeah, maybe it's Kiddush, but why is there no bracha? Says the Sfas Emes, there's no bracha because you need a bracha to go ahead and say thank you to Hashem for this. We need a bracha to get us in the mood to go and feel as if we're leaving Mitzrayim tonight. That's what it's all about. One of the hardest mitzvahs, say many of the Mefarshim, the hardest mitzvah in all of Torah is to actually feel as if we are leaving Mitzrayim tonight. It's very difficult. One of the best mashal I think I've heard is like if someone broke a finger or a bone and now the finger is healed. So it was the same finger that was broken, but it's just not broken anymore. But it was the same. So we got to feel as if we were back in that situation to feel it. It was really us. It was our people. It's all part of us. Something difficult says, we don't need a bracha for this. That's something that should come naturally to us. We should know the Ratzon Hashem is to go ahead and be Mesaper Yetzias Mitzrayim Balayla Hazeh. Of course, that's what we're supposed to do. And we see this idea come up in a classic Or Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha, in Ilchos Kriya Shema. He points out that the Rambam does not quote Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim as one of the mitzvos. Now, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is reserved for Seder night. There's also the mitzvah that we have every single day of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we fulfill that by saying the Parsha of Vayomer in Kriya Shema. So, what's the difference between the two? Maybe one's more question-answer, one's more kids-focused. Okay, that's a separate topic. Maybe we'll talk about that Pesach time. But there's no mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, says the Rambam. And everyone asks, how could you not count this as a mitzvah? What's going on? So some say, no, it's really counted under Kriya Shema. It's part of Kriya Shema. You got to go ahead and do that. Others say, no, it's mitzvah Shebelev, so that's why we're not going to cover it. That's why it's different. It's really only a mitzvah Derabbanan, maybe. Yeah.
Don't we say every morning, when we say the Akedah, prayers that God commanded Abraham for the Akedah to sacrifice his son?
Okay. Oh, you're saying that it was Kasher Tziva Oso Elokim? Well, does it say that there?
He wasn't told to
Well, that's what he wants to say. Kach na, that's really what the commandment was. Says the Ran. Gotta go check out the Ran. That's what the Ran says. That this kach na, that was really when he said, please take your son and go and shecht him. As opposed to saying, you're chayv, this is a mitzvah midoraisa, you have to go and do this. Like Bris Mila, he was chayv to do. He knew he had to go ahead and do Bris Mila. But when it comes to this, maybe it was something a little different. Now, most don't hold of that. That's why it's a pretty novel shita, but the fact that shita even exists, and it kind of fits into the words, na is a strange lashon, right? So, interesting. So, again, this Or Sameach Nichos Kriyashma, the Rambam doesn't count as mitzvah as a mitzvah to have Yizichiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. So, some say it's only the Rabbanon because of Belev. Some say it's included in Kriyashma. So, how are we supposed to understand this? What's this all about? So, says the Or Sameach, there are really different types of Dinei Derabbanon. There are different types of mitzvos, Midrabbanon, that we have. Some function as more of a gezeira. You know, you don't want to, let's say, to protect us, like Netilas Yadayim. So we assume there's some sort of ruach ra, so we want to protect ourselves from having these bad spirits or whatever else it may be, so we make sure to wash our hands. Other types of mitzvos midrabanan are things which just came after Matan Torah, like something like reading the Megillah. That was an event that occurred after Matan Torah, so that's why we have that din derabanan. Says the Or Sameach, maybe there are other mitzvos midrabanan that function as dinim in Ratzon Hashem. It's not necessarily that it's a protection, it's not necessarily that it's a later inclusion, rather it's just a din in Ratzon Hashem, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. This was Hashem's hallmark saving of the Jewish people, Ratzon Hashem, Mitzvah Midrabanan, Ratzon Hashem, that we should certainly go ahead and follow this. And we see this idea actually come up in a very interesting point, Lahalacha, as well. There are many places throughout Shas where the Torah and the Gemara goes through many psukim for something, and gives a lot of proofs from psukim, and then says, you know what, actually, it's just then asmachta bi'alma, it's just considered an asmachta. So actually, just because we are in the sixth parak of Brachos now in the Amud Yomi, we just did this in the first Mishnah, the first Amud of the sixth parak, the Gemara talks about the fact of that we have such a concept called bracha rishona. We all make brachos all day on our water, on our bread, on our fruit, on our vegetables, on our cakes and cookies, whatever it is that we're eating, we make a bracha rishona. How do we know that we do such a thing as a bracha rishona? The Mishnah just assumes that you do it. How do we know this? So the Gemara goes through many proofs. Kodesh hilu lim la Hashem. Maybe it comes from the halachos of Orla, Netta, Revai. Maybe it comes from the Shivas Haminim, Yachata v'Savato v'Irachta. But then the Gemara says, no, Ela, Svara bi'almahu. It's really just a Svara. The Olam Svara bi'almahu. It's just a Svara. It's a logical thought, which is what? That you're not allowed to benefit from this world without a bracha. So there's a big discussion in the Rishonim and the Achronim. Okay, so where did we just leave off? We just had all of these psukim, and then we say, Elasvara bialmahu. So what does this mean? So says the Pnei Yeshua and Bava Metzia, that we see in many other places in the Gemara, that when we have many psukim, and then we say, Elasvara bialmahu, it's just a svara, it's something which is logical, it's because we don't need a pasuk. The psukim could have sufficed, but we don't need it, and this svara functions on a de'oraisa level. And brachos might be mi de'oraisa. Interesting. Most don't hold of that. Others say svara bialma just means derabanan. Says Tosos svara bialma, and all of these psukim before that we were quoting are just nasmachta bialma. Now there's a fascinating machlokes as to what an asmachta bialma means. Says the Rambam in a few places, asmachta is a memory device. The Rabbanon wanted us to remember certain halachos. They knew that if we didn't have certain psukim attached to them, we wouldn't necessarily be able to remember all of the halachos. There's so much to learn. Torah Shebal Peh is Baal Peh. Now, we have it now written down, Baruch Hashem, Eis Lasos LaHashem, Efiru Torah Zecha. We didn't want all of the Torah to be gone. Otherwise, I mean, I know with my memory, no way we would have had a lot of this stuff, but I know we would have had some Gaonim and people that would be able to help us, but we have everything written down. So, says the Rambam, Asmachta bi'alma is just a memory device. Obviously, it's derabanan. That's how it's going to function, but it's just a memory device. That's all it is. Says the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tezayin Amud Beis. He says, to say that is derech minus. It's the way that apikorsim speak. Talking about the Rambam. That's pretty aggressive lashon. He says this in the context, the Gemara is talking about saying Malchios on Rosh Hashanah. And it says that Hashem wants us to say Malchios, and it's an Asmachta bi'alma. How can you say Hashem wants us to if it's not written in the Torah? Says the Ritva, Asmachta bi'alma is not just a din in being a memory device. Asmachta bi'alma is a giloy of Ratzon Hashem. It shows us what Ratzon Hashem is supposed to be. It shows us what Hashem really wants from us. It's not just a regular din derabanan, it's a higher level din derabanan because it's a din in Ratzon Hashem. Rabbi Sibolovsky likes to put it like this. He says, you know, if a couple gets married and the first three nights of their marriage, the wife says to the husband, hey, do you mind taking out the garbage before you go to sleep? So he does it. Comes the fourth night, and she doesn't say anything, and the garbage is not taken out. The next morning, she says, why do you not take out the garbage? You didn't ask me to. You should have known by now. It's the fourth night. I've asked you three nights in a row. You should have known by now that you're supposed to take out the garbage. Ratzon Hashem, it's a din Ratzon Hashem. We're supposed to know what it is that Hashem wants from us, and we see this idea come up over and over and over again, lehalacha. Now, idea number three. Again, number one was this Vasis HaYashar V'Tov. Certain things, that just not everything could be written. The Ramban, about all the laws that we could follow everything and still be a jerk. We got to make sure to go above Lefnim Mishar Sadin, Dinin Tabar Mitzvah, Shabbos. Number two was this idea that the Torah leaves things ambiguous, maybe a little on purpose sometimes, to give us an opportunity to show our love for the mitzvahs. Kach Na'as Bincha by Avram Avinu, Sipor Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, and this idea of an asmachta of what bracha, or what Ratzon Hashem really is. So bracha rishona, it's very serious. So some wanted to say maybe there are three categories. Maybe it's Doraisa Derabanan, or just this din asmachta, that it's the Ratzon Hashem. So a lot to discuss when it comes to brachos. Okay. But now we're up to number three. Number three is that based on our halachic sense, based on all of our experience in interacting with halacha and living as halachic people, we are sometimes able to figure out what Hashem would want, even if it's not so clear in a certain situation. And for this, the Rav had a beautiful insight when he was giving a hesped for his uncle, the Brisker Rav. And the Rav said, we know we say the pasuk of Morashaki Hilas Yaakov, Torah Tzivaranu Moshe Morashaki Hilas Yaakov, and the Gemara learns out, Al Tikre Morasha Ela Me'urasa, that which is as if we are married. Me'urasas is a Lashon of Kiddushin. It's as if we're married to the Torah. Now, the Rav asked, why is it that we are Mekadesh to the Torah, that there's Kiddushin? We know as part of every single wedding, there are two elements to the wedding. There's the Kiddushin and the Nisuin, right? So we have these two elements, and both take place under the chuppah. That's why you have the ring. Why we read the ksuba in between? Because it's there to separate the kiddushin and the nisuin. So why would we compare it to kiddushin? Kiddushin is the earlier stage, the not as intimate a stage. Nisuin is when you're really married. So if we want to talk about you're being married to the Torah, it should be that you're married to the Torah, not just that you're engaged to the Torah halachically. So we wanted to explain that when it comes to kiddushin versus nisuin, there's very clear differences. Kiddushin is more of a kinyan. That's why we know kesef shtar ubiya, the certain things work. It's these three things that work. So we do kinyan kesef, right? We have the ring. We make sure we know what it's worth. We make sure it belongs to the person. All of these halachos that come up and, you know, the lumdus behind everything. You can't go and be mekadesh someone with something which is usar bahana. So if someone was going to go and be mekadesh their wife with a shorah niskal, with some sort of ox that is meant to be stoned, that would probably be a bad idea. I don't know if anyone's ever done that before. One of my classmates in my shiur with me, so Swalski, we spent a lot of time talking about this idea of Isurei Hana, and he always gave the example of someone being Mekadesh, a woman with a Shorah Niskal, and it was at his wedding under his chuppah, and Swalski was Misadar Kedushin, and he's like, yeah, Rabbi, I don't have a Shorah Niskal with me, is that okay? And you know, he's very excited, he was able to actually joke about it under his chuppah. But how do we get into that? Right, okay, so we know when it comes to Kiddushin, Kesef Shtar Ubiya, what you do, it's very clear. But when it comes to Nisuin, it's very complicated. We know for Nisuin, we need what's called Chuppah. Now the question is, what is Chuppah? How many Shittos are there? Probably about seven, something like that, Shittos as to what Chuppah is. That's why some say maybe even Badekin might be a form of Kiddushin, might be a form of Nisuin. Some say it's when you walk the Kala out of her house. Some say it's when you have Yichud. Some say it's Yichud that it's long enough to have a Bia. Some say it's the first meal that you have with her. Some say it's this contraption that we have, which is known as the Chuppah. Others, there's so many different opinions as to what Nisuin is. So we go ahead and we try to do as many of them as we can. That's why we have all of these elements of the wedding. So we try to do all of these Shittos, but it's much, much more difficult to put our finger on what exactly chuppah, what exactly nisuin is. So you said the difference is that one is more transactional and one is more intimate. So said the Rav, most people, their interaction with the Torah is an interaction of kiddushin. It's nothing bad. It's a connection. It's a strong connection, but it's more transactional. It's more matter of fact. But you have certain yechidei school, certain people who mamish live the Torah, who they are the Torah. Their essence is one and the same as the Torah. The Brisker Rav, his uncle, he said, this is someone who had a nisuin with the Torah, not just a kiddushin with the Torah. He was able to go and live his life in a way that every single thing that he did, every single way that he interacted with anyone, was all based on the Torah, and that's really the ideal. We see this with Rashi. Rashi was talking about what the ephod looks like when it's discussing all the things in the base. I'm just trying to figure out what the ephod looks like, and the Rashi says, I have no idea what the ephod looks like. But libi omer li, but my heart tells me, and then he goes on for 20 lines talking about what the ephod looks like. What does that mean, libi omer li? I don't have libi omer li of that. It's different. This is what Rashi. This is Rashi. He had this nisuin with the Torah. He was one and the same. So number three is that using our halachic sense and using our way of living as Jewish people, especially in the world in which we live, we can figure it out on our own sometimes. And it's obviously much harder. We're better lawyers when we're defending ourselves more than anything in the world. We're so good at defending ourselves. And it's not always easy to see the other perspective coming from the other side. But to know that we have this halachic sense and we're able to apply it to understand what it is that Hashem really wants from us. We see this again in other areas of halacha. Rav Asher Weiss has this all over the place. He talks about tzar balei chayim, the fact that we're not allowed to damage and do bad things to animals. And he brings 11 sources for the fact that we have this issue of, or this concept of tzar balei chayim. You're not allowed to go and torture animals. Maybe it's from Karov Hashem, maybe it's from different psukim. What was this? Maybe it works from Kilayim, all these different things. And then he says at the end, it's really just a din in Ratzon Hashem. It's pretty simple. It's a din in Ratzon Hashem. Of course, it's not what Hashem wants from us. And we see this idea as well in the mitzvah of Chinuch. There's a big machlokes, whether the mitzvah of Chinuch, to be mechanech the next generation, is a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah d'rabbana. What does it mean? You hold it's not a mitzvah d'oraisa to go and teach the next generation? What does that mean? It wouldn't be a mitzvah d'oraisa. So the Rav Asher Weiss explains, no. The details of how exactly you need to be mechanech, that might be a machlokas. That could be machlokas. Are those deoraisa derabbanan? But the concept of chinuch, that's a clear din in Ratzon Hashem. Forget about everything else. Ratzon Hashem, of course Hashem wants us to be mechanech in the next generation. It's not even a question. So we know that we're definitely covered in that way. So, number four now. Comes Rabbi Chanan. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in his Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, and he explains a beautiful idea. He says the Rambam and the Ramban have a very famous machlokas. The machlokas is about how we interact with dinei derabbanan. Says the Rambam, there is a mitzvah mi deoraisa of, or an isser mi deoraisa of lo sasur, that we have to listen to the rabbis. And if you don't listen to the rabbis, not talking about like listening to me, talking about listening to the Sanhedrin, if we don't follow mitzvahs mi derabbanan, then we are over on isure deoraisa. Every single time we violate any one of the mitzvahs mi derabbanan, it's also an isser deoraisa. Now, that's a big problem because how many mitzvahs are there, we said? 613. If that's true, that every mitzvah mi derabbanan is really a mitzvah mi deoraisa, how many mitzvahs are there? A lot. So how exactly does he get to the 613? So this is all a big question. The Ramban disagrees, and he asks, that's one of his questions, but he also says, we have a concept known as safek derabbanan lekula, that if you have a safek, whether you did something, if it's a din deoraisa, then you'd go ahead and repeat it. You'd go ahead and do it again. You'd go ahead and be machmir in that situation. But if you have a safek derabbanan, and you're not sure whether you did a certain mitzvah midarabbanan, or there's some sort of safek on a derabbanan level, lekula. So ask the Rambam, if you are right that every derabbanan is really a deoraisa, how does this concept of safek derabbanan lekula exist? Everything's a din deoraisa. So you should never be allowed to go lekula. So the answer that's given is no. When we say that it's always going to be lo sasur mi deoraisa, that's when it's vadai. That's when we know for sure you're violating something which is usur. But if we have a suffix, that by definition would then go ahead and be a din derabbanan. So that's how they answer that question. That's how they are able to go ahead and save in that way. But says Rav Elchanan, he asks on the Ramban, so according to the Ramban, that dine derabbanan are really not based on lo sasur. There's no deoraisa hint to them at all. So how do we even know that we're supposed to listen to the rabbis? According to the Rambam, I understand you have this pasuk of lo sasur telling me that you have to listen to the rabbis, and that means everything's going to have this deoraisa element to it. But according to the Ramban, that there's no connection of lo sasur is just a specific din in hilchos dayanim of judges. How do we even know that you're supposed to listen to the rabbis at all? So says Rabbi Chanan, the reason why we know this is because just as the rabbis have the power to create new takanos, and again, the rabbis like the Sanhedrin and whatever else it may be, so too, it must be a din in Ratzon Hashem that we have to go ahead and listen to the Rabbanim as well. It goes both ways, meaning we can't just say that they created these laws without having to listen to these laws. It wouldn't make any sense. There's clearly a din in Ratzon Hashem in this element, and we see this even in the Torah itself. When Moshe goes and breaks the luchos, however we want to understand this, maybe they broke on their own, maybe he threw them down. Yasher kochacha kasher dibarta. Chazal teach us, based on the Torah, that Hashem said, nice job. I didn't tell you to do that, but that's what was needed in this situation. But there's this idea of understanding something further, knowing the Ratzon Hashem. And we see this idea again throughout the Torah with Bilam. You look at the words itself of Bilam, and Bilam says, oh, if Hashem wants me to do this, then I'll go. If not, then I won't. So what did Bilam do wrong? You know, Chazal bash him, as opposed to Yaakov Avinu. In last week's parsha, everything's, oh, Yaakov's so being so truthful. But Bilam, everyone's bashing, but you look at the psukim themselves, they don't seem that bad. You look at Yaakov's psukim themselves, they seem pretty bad. So we explained over and over last week, Yaakov had no choice. He was forced by a neviyah, and he really didn't want to do this. He felt so uncomfortable. That's why he was trying to be caught. Pen, as opposed, he said, ulai, yimusheni avi, instead of pen, because he wanted to be caught. He didn't even try to hide his voice. Right? If you're doing an impression of someone, you probably wouldn't talk in the same way that you talk. You talk like them. So it doesn't make any sense that he wanted to be called because he couldn't handle it. But Bilam, what did he do wrong? So many explain, it was clear, Ratzon Hashem, that Hashem didn't want him to go. He told him many times. Okay, at a certain point, B'derach Shadam Rotze Leilech, Hashem lets him go. At the end of the day, Hashem's going to let you go in whatever direction you want. But Hashem tried to tell him, though. Hashem pushed him in a certain direction, and he just wouldn't take that for an answer. The Ratzon Hashem is something that we really need to be able to focus on. And this also explains how there could be Dinei Derabbanan before Matan Torah. Right, the Gemara tells us that Avraham Avinu kept Kol HaTorah Kula, even the Dinei Derabbanan. What does that mean, Dinei Derabbanan? Now you can have Dinei Derabbanan before there is even a Torah. No, if Dinei Derabbanan are a Din in Ratzon Hashem, in understanding what Hashem wants and that it's not limited to certain things, then it makes sense that these things existed before the Torah. So let's just review our four things that we have. We spoke about Ratzon Hashem being an Eved Hashem in every single thing that we do, and really understanding what it is that Hashem wants from us, even outside of the 613. Number one is that the 613 can't include every single thing. Vasisa Yashar Vatov, Dina Debar Metzor, all these things in Hilchos Shabbos of Shabbason. What exactly is it? How do we define it? That's what we got to figure out. That's the Ratzon Hashem. Number two is that sometimes things are ambiguous on purpose, so we could go ahead and show that we really do care about the Ratzon Hashem. Kach na'es bincha, according to the Ran, that maybe that was the test of Avraham Avinu, that he did it on his own. We see this also by Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zechir Yitzias Mitzrayim, this machlokes about what asmachta is, the Rambam versus the Ritva, all different ways of understanding how we're supposed to do things. We spoke about the third thing of Nisuin and Kedushin with the Torah, how our relationship with the Torah is supposed to be, and Tzar Balei Chaim, and the halachos of chinuch being deraisa derabanan, and we ended with this idea of the kundras divrei sofrim, that really dinei derabanan all function as a din of Ratzon Hashem. According to the Ramban, why do we even know we have to listen to the rabbis? Because it's Ratzon Hashem. We got to be able to figure out what it is that Hashem truly wants from us. And to close, Rabbi Rosner wanted to close with a beautiful idea of the Gemara in Brachos as well. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that the Malachim came to Hashem, and he said, and they said to Hashem, Hashem, you said that you don't favor anyone, you don't take bribes, lo yikach shochad, you don't take bribes from anyone, it says in your Torah that you're not allowed to do so, yet you still favor the Jewish people. Why can you, you're not allowed to favor people. Why are you favoring the Jewish people? So what does Hashem say back? Hashem says back, well, you expect me not to favor them. Look, I tell them, Brachos. Very good, I tell them to go ahead and just make a Birchas, a bracha achrona, when they're full, and they go ahead and they make brachos, even when they just have a kezayis and a kebetza. So now this is actually used lehalacha in the sugya of what you really need to bench for. What's the chiv of benching? From this gemara, it seems that you really only need to bench when you're full, and kezayis and kebetza is all just derabanan. Gemara later brings psukim for kezayis and kebetza, which seems to imply the other way. Okay, it's a separate topic, not for right now. But what seems to definitely jump out at us from that gemara is that when we go above and beyond for Hashem, when we try to follow the Ratzon Hashem and do what Hashem wants from us, Hashem follows in kind, and Hashem goes and shows us favor, and Hashem goes and shows why we are the chosen people, and Hashem goes above and beyond for us. So, Mirch Hashem, we will continue to go above and beyond for Hashem. You come out to a shir, 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night, maybe easier than 8 o'clock, but still not easy. We'll discuss time. But you come out to a shir, you continue to go to davening, whatever it may be, everyone pushing on their own level, at their own pace, with whatever it is that they're struggling with. If we continue to push for Hashem, Mirtz Hashem, Hashem will continue to push for us. Everyone should have a